I live in Israel. This season is dedicated to the memory of the 1,400 of my countrymen who were massacred on October 7th and the 240 people that were kidnapped and are being held hostage by the terrorist organization Hamas. Hopefully they will be returned to their families as soon as possible, and hopefully this terrible war will be able to come to a peaceful end very soon. And welcome to Minute 105 of Season 6 of Move Around Minute, the daily podcast where we take a Capra-esque journey through the 1946 classic, It's a Wonderful Life, one minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again to finish off his 5 days on this show is Father David Mowry, the official chaplain of the Movies by Minute community. Welcome back to the show.
You're very welcome, Rob. Thank you. Thank you very much for having me back. Hold on. There's so much wind blowing out here. The door has suddenly flowed open. I just need to hold. Okay. There. All right. Oh, you don't have to be all that about it. My goodness.
Well, thank you for closing that door. That's appreciated. But as you know, whenever a door closes, another window opens. So who knows? And so, Minute 105 begins with Clarence first berating, then praising George, and ends with George being dumbfounded. So, yesterday we ended things with George making one of the most powerful statements of this movie, saying, "Oh, everyone would be better off if I was never born." And Clarence says to him, "You mustn't say things like that. You..." And then he stops for a second, and we can actually see the light bulb above his head. You know, if this was a pure comedy, Capra would have had a light turn on above, like behind him and above him. You know, I mean, I can imagine it, but obviously it's not there. And then he goes, wait a minute. That's an idea. And as he's doing this, he like looks up. So basically he's communicating with, Franklin and Joseph. By doing this, so we can see him connecting with Frank. Like
this solves Clarence's problem. He doesn't know how to get through to George, and so something this extreme presents itself, because maybe what's making the light bulb go off in Clarence's head, he's trying to tell George, "You don't know all that you've done." And he hears this and realizes, this is a good counterfactual. This is a way to show George just what he has and why throwing it away would be a detriment to everyone.
That's right. And then, Clarence sort of has a one-sided conversation, which anyone who doesn't know what's really going on here, it will definitely think that Clarence has, lost his marbles, because he goes, "Well, what do you think?" He goes, "Yeah, that'll do it. All right."
Yeah.
And then he turns to George and goes, "You've got your wish. You've never been born." And as you mentioned at the opening of this minute, you know, the way that the movie shows something unnatural mm-hmm. is happening here is done in a very interesting way.
Supernatural.
Or I don't know if unnatural is the right word. It's supernatural. It's beyond nature.
Yeah, because what's interesting here is that Clarence is not a genie. He is not maliciously interpreting George's wish out of a sense of kind of a mechanical, technological sense of duty, but it's rather like, "Oh no, don't say that. Wait a minute. That might be something. We could do something with that." So there's a telos, there's an overall purpose, a goal in mind that this has for George, that this isn't going to be this way forever and ever. There is a change of heart that is aimed in doing this. And so it's said very simply, "You have your wish." There's no hocus pocus. It's a simple declaration of fact, which makes the strangeness of what follows stand out, because it happens. Well, of course, Clarence thinks it's going to happen very quietly. And then the powers upstairs have different ideas.
Correct. But also, one of the things that I like about this is that, you know, you mentioned the fact that Clarence is not a genie, okay? But you see that it's not Clarence's, Clarence is not causing this to happen. He's merely suggesting the possibility of doing this. And, you know, he needs to, I guess, you know, if you want to look at it from a bureaucratic aspect, he needs to put the request in to a higher, you know, a higher level person who can actually make that happen. You know, that type of thing. So it's very effective the way that they show that. So then the wind blows and the door flies open, you know, and you see the Clarence's undergarments, you know, moving all around, just like, you know, we discussed, you know, on your first episode a few days ago. And I mean, Clarence has a great response. He goes and like slams the door shut, and you know, it's not easy for him to do that. And then he goes, he looks up and goes, "You don't have to make all the fuss about it." You know, he's continuing his conversation with above. He's excluding George from this. Do you think that a lot of times in stories or movies or whatever, when a supernatural being like Clarence is talking to other supernatural beings, you know, the people around them can't hear that they're having that conversation. So what do you think is going on here? Do you think this is something that if George was actually paying attention, he'd be able to have heard this whole conversation that Clarence is having with Franklin and Joseph? Or is it supposed to be happening like on a different plane?
I don't think there's anything in the text of the movie to suggest that this conversation is happening spiritually or inaudibly. I think George is just so morose and caught up in his own depression that he's not paying attention very carefully to what Clarence is muttering to himself. I think it's more of a Shakespearean aside, if anything, you know, kind of something that the character does while on stage with other characters, but it's meant to communicate interior conversation. But in closing the door and yelling at the divine powers about, "Oh, you don't have to make all that fuss about it," that's just funny. I mean, there's part of the, but we're getting a sense of Clarence's character. He's simple. He's straightforward. He is aware that he's working with the powers upstairs, and that it's setting up a joke later on as George and Clarence are leaving Nick's bar.
Correct. No, but I'm looking at more from the perspective that, I mean, I like your interpretation that it's like a Shakespearean aside, but the Shakespearean aside is usually someone talking to themselves. In this case, Clarence is not talking to himself. He's talking to, I assume, Franklin and Joseph. So, you know, it would make more sense for, you know, they don't like freeze George at that point where this is happening. So, but George, if George was paying attention, he'd only hear Clarence's side anyway. You know, he wouldn't hear the whole, the two sides of the conversation.
Maybe an angel first class is able to do all that communication telepathically, but only an angel second class needs to say it out loud.
Okay, that's the answer. I think that's what it is. There you go. You hit the nail on the nose on that one. Yeah. George then looks around and goes, what did you just say? You know, I mean, did he notice that the door flew open? It's, you know, he doesn't react to that at all. So it's very interesting the way that they show that. And then Clarence basically tells George the premise of this whole movie. He goes, "You've never been born. You don't exist. You haven't a care in the world. No worries, no obligations, no $8,000 to get. No Potter looking for you with the sheriff." And I mean, first of all, I've pointed this out numerous times throughout the course of this whole season. It's very funny that everyone refers to Mr. Potter as Potter. You have an angel that comes down that just refers to him as Potter. You know, it's very informal that they're calling, you know, the nemesis of everyone in the town. Everyone just calls him by his last name. He himself called up someone on the phone and says, "This is Potter."
And there's your answer. That he only refers to himself as Potter. He doesn't use his own first name. I couldn't even tell you what Potter's first name is.
Henry.
Yeah, who's going to call that guy Hank? Nobody.
How about Harry? How about Harry?
Nah, he's Potter.
Harry Potter? Harry Potter. But at the beginning of the movie, when Franklin and Joseph introduce Clarence to Potter, they say that's Mr. Potter. You know, but I just find it very interesting that everyone refers to him as Potter. You're saying that maybe that's his nickname, that he wants people just to call him Potter.
I mean, it's how he refers to himself, one. If he just, so-and-so, it's Potter. Blah, 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 blah. So, you know,
That's right.
So he refers to himself that way.
Secondly, I'm still looking for...
As Franklin and Joseph are getting Clarence ready to help George, they're going to refer to people as George refers to them to make it as easy as possible for Clarence to talk with George about, you know, what's going on in his life. And so if Clarence was talking about, Henry's not looking for you, George would be like, who the hell is Henry?
Henry, you know, that mean guy. Oh, you mean Potter. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, Potter. Okay, now I know who you're talking about. Why did you say so in the first place? You know, you should have just said Potter. Ah, okay. All right, that is a fair interpretation of why he's referred to as Potter. So it's a term of endearment that they call him Mr. Potter. Potter. Do you think that George right away realizes that he's hearing differently?
It slowly dawns on him. I think that's more of what he is keying into. I think from the way that Jimmy Stewart is characterizing George here, he's not so much listening to the content of what Clarence is saying as just realizing that, wait a minute, I'm hearing in stereo again for the first time in my adult life, for the first time in, you know, I don't know how, like about 30 years or so.
1919 to 1945, it's 26 years.
Yeah, 26 years almost. Yeah, so that's what's more amazing to George than anything else that Clarence has said, which is why he doesn't key into anything that Clarence is saying in this scene, that George will kind of go back to life as normal because he's so thrown by this old wound of his suddenly being healed. And he comes up with very naturalistic explanations for it. Oh, it must have been that cold water. And like, I don't know if that's how it works, but okay, maybe.
Well, again, and so at this point, George says, say something else in that ear. He goes, sure, you can hear out of it. Well, that's the doggonest thing. I haven't heard anything out of that ear since I was a kid. Must have been that jump in the cold water. On a personal note, I remember, I think it was about 5 years ago, we were on a family vacation in the northern part of Israel. And we were at some sort of spring, and I remember jumping into the spring, and the water was freezing. And for literally a month and a half afterwards, my hearing in one ear was changed. Whoa. And I couldn't get the water out of that ear for that long until one day it just cleared up on its own. It was very strange, but the idea is, up until then, I never thought about the fact that, you know, being in cold water could potentially, you know, affect hearing. That, I mean, we all take showers, baths, whatever, you know, sometimes, or go in the pool, and sometimes, you know, you get a little bit of water in your ear, you pump a little bit on the ear, and then the water clears up and stuff like that. So, you know, when I was doing the research for this episode, I started thinking to myself, well, wait a second, what if George's whole problem was what I had for a month and a half, but he's had for 26 years, where just one day, you know, his eardrum just, you know, got rid of that little bit of moisture that was there, that was causing all the problems.
The only time I've heard of cold water causing hearing loss is It's a Wonderful Life. I've never encountered it elsewhere.
And now I've told you
heard about cold water causing hearing loss. This is a great day.
There you go. That's right. And what a day to do that, April 2nd. Come on. If it was April Fool's, you might
it's
not have believed
it. It's a good thing you saved this story until today.
That's right. Well, it's because it's pertinent to today's story. to today's minute. There's a reason for that. I don't randomly talk about things that aren't connected to the to the minute. Or I try not to. Sometimes you know, we go off on a tangent, but there's a connection to get to that tangent. Over the weekend, we talked about the fact that, you know, Clarence mentions the fact that George's lip is bleeding, which didn't really make much sense within the context of that particular discussion. But now he comes back and says, hey, your lips stopped bleeding too, George. And George then puts his, you know, finger to his lip and goes, well, what do you know about that?
And gives it a great big lick. I mean, he really plays with his mouth and, you know, uses his tongue all over the place to get a good feel for it, as if he doesn't believe his own hand.
Yes, that's right. He's like, oh, I don't taste the blood, so it must be good. And that's the way this minute ends. You know, even though George is very confused, you know, people are going to have to come back tomorrow to find out, you know, why George is so confused about this and where things are going to go. So
before they come back the next just one last thing I wanted to point out about this minute. So I mentioned a couple days ago that these minutes that I've been talking about have been without music. We had Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Star for a little Clarence motif. But now the music has come back in with, after Clarence shuts that door, there's underscoring for the rest of the scene, and it creates this sense of uncertainty and tension. There are no clear resolutions in the chords of the music. It creates this sense of strangeness, of an uncanny, unsettled feeling, because we're in a different world now. And again, this is part of what I was talking about, what follows being more of a vision than an actual look into reality, that we're at something that's at a higher pitch of existence, something that's a little more vivid, a little more dreamlike, and the music sets that kind of dreamlike scenario for this, where there's not quite a usual earthly logic at play here.
That's very true, and I think it really works well by just using those musical cues to explain things to us from that perspective. So I like that. I definitely think you're right about that. So every Tuesday, we have a segment called Off the Beaten Track, Inspirational Story Edition, where my guests will give some sort of story, anecdote, adventure, misadventure, something that's happened to them over the course of their life that was somewhat inspirational to them. So you probably have tons of these stories, but I'm sure you could probably pick one, you know, to tell us about.
Well, as you asked this question in our preparation for this minute, and so I've been giving some thought to it in our discussion, and the one that jumps to mind is a story from January of 2008. I was in college, and I and a group of my fellow seminarians, that is, other men who, like me, were getting ready to become priests, we were getting ready for a semester abroad in Rome. And we had shown up to the airport, we had checked our bags, and we were in the waiting area for the plane. And while we were there, we got to chatting with, as you would well imagine, a priest who was there waiting to go over to Rome as well. And he was with this big pilgrimage group, and he was very excited. He was saying, oh, yes, you know, our group, we have a private audience with the Pope the day that we land. So we're all really looking forward to this. So we enjoyed chatting with him. And then, you know, the nice airline attendant gets on the loudspeaker and says, well, our flight's been delayed 1 hour. Well, then 1 hour became 2 hours. 2 hours became 4 hours, and 4 hours became 8 hours, and 8 hours became canceled. And so at that, and it was, you know, well before we hit that 8 hour mark, it just was clear that that flight was not leaving that day. So we all pick up our carry-on bags, we truck down to the desk, and us as seminarians, we line up in the non-priority lines, because we know that, okay, we don't have anything major we're trying to get over for. Whenever we get there, we get there. Our priest friend and his pilgrimage group, the ones with the private audience of the Pope, they were in the priority line. And they were really agitating to get on a flight that night in order to make it to Rome in time. And so this priest looks over and sees the eight of us or so, you know, lined up, being very dutiful seminarians. You know, we're trying to be polite on our best behavior. And he looks at us and he says, what are you doing? And we said, like, oh, well, Father, we're waiting our turn to get our tickets, and we'll just take whatever we can. And he looked at us with astonishment on his face, and he said, don't be fools. Get in this line. And at that point, he took responsibility for us. He absorbed us into his pilgrimage group and included us in the count of people that he needed to get to Rome the next day. So there's this major flurry at the airline ticket counter. They're trying to work out for, you know, this whole big group, plus now eight more seminarians who've joined on, but they don't know that. And we get put on an American Airlines flight that's leaving in like 45 minutes, that's connecting through London. And so we book it down the concourse. Everybody is getting searched by airline security because everything's been happening at the last minute, and the TSA is very unhappy. They're looking through everybody's bags. And we rush down to the airplane with the warning of our original flight carrier ringing in our ears, the original warning saying, look, we've got you the ticket on the plane. You can't eat anything. You don't have any meal service on this plane. So that's ringing in our ears. We get there on time. We get boarded onto the plane and we're settling in for our trip, you know, to London to get to Rome eventually. And the nice airline attendant comes by and looks at me and says, well, sir, what would you like for dinner? And I look at her with shock. And I was like, oh, I'm sorry. I got transferred onto this flight from this other air carrier. They said I wasn't going to be getting a meal. And she had this look of offense on her face and said, sir, our airlines would never let our customers go hungry. And I said, I'll have the chicken, please. And it was this wonderful moment of sheer grace that we were able to eventually get on this flight and get to Rome, because that I don't know when we would have arrived otherwise. There's a whole another part of that story that I want to save for another time, perhaps when we're off the beaten path. But in that moment, I was so grateful to that priest who told us to not be idiots and to get in line with his group in order to get over to Rome. And we landed safely. They all went off to their private audience with the Pope, and we schlepped our way to the dormitory where we were staying for our study abroad program.
Too bad he didn't include you on his meeting.
Well, you know, the Swiss Guard are a little more careful than airline ticket counter agents, who are under a lot of pressure. So that was a chance we didn't want to take.
Apparently. Yeah. Okay. All right. That's fair. Appreciate it. All right. Would you like to one last time this season tell people where they can find you?
One last time, you can find me at my website, fatherdavidmowry.com. That's FatherDavidMowry.com. You can also find me on Twitter. I'm at FRMowry. Sometimes I tweet things, or I guess X things now. I don't know. Anyway, those are the main places that you can find me.
All right, great. And while you're doing that, you can rate, review, and subscribe. A name podcatcher might be using to listen to the show, and finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Move Around Minute. You can find me on Twitter. You can find me on Facebook, and you can find me on my website, movearoundminute.com. So I want to thank you once again for joining me for these last five days. It's been very educational for me. I hope you enjoyed yourself too. And more importantly, I hope all the listeners.
I hope so too. Thank you so much for having me. It's truly been a wonderful life these last 5 minutes.
Well, it's a part of a wonderful life. Yeah. That wonderful life is not over. It's going to keep going. All right. So I will be back tomorrow with a new guest. But until then, hot dog.
Hot dog.
I love you truly, truly dear. Life with its sorrow, life with its tears.